Good morning, everyone, and welcome. You are on the grid here on 11.16 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy. I'm up in Ipswich again this weekend, as I was last weekend for the Supercars. This weekend, though, it's for the Shannons Nationals, round five of the series. And look at that and other things here on the grid. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning to you.
Thank you, Crowley. And, well, a man that just always does his finest work, is just no stopping this man, is Darren Smith, one of our co-commentators up here at the Shannons Nationals. How are you, Darren?
Pretty good, Tony. Lovely morning here in Queensland. Both you and I have got the big Kero bird up here this weekend, and lovely, lovely weather for us, isn't it, being Melbourne locals?
What have we got?
I don't know. What does that even mean?
What is a Kero
birding bird?
Are you talking about a plane?
Gee whiz.
Wow.
That's
look, it's early. There's some jokes we can make about Queensland being 30 minutes and 30 years,
but you're from Adelaide, so you probably don't want to go there.
Hey, guys, let's have a look at some of the racing that we've had this weekend. We'll have a good discussion shortly about night racing, and we'll talk about the production car soon, but we'll get the other stuff out of the way first. And we've had some good racing from the local series. You know what? I'm starting to like the idea of local series actually joining the Shannons Nationals as they get into town. We had the Alfa Romeos in Sydney a few weeks ago, and this week we've got the Hyundai XLs, and it provides some good racing.
Yeah, I think it's really good that probably some of these state or even grassroots club level top sprint based categories get an opportunity to be rock stars for a weekend, and the Shannons Nationals have been more than accommodating for that. And over the years, that the Shannons Nationals have seen burgeoning classes like the ever popular Kumho Tyres about touring cars. They started from just about nowhere. I mean, the Hyundai's, didn't they? Had 30 of them or something on the grid yesterday at Sandown a couple of weeks ago. There was 58 of them on the grid. So, yeah, I think you're right there, Shebeck. So we, at every round, if we have one of those invited categories along, that as long as they provide good racing and entertainment, that's great.
Yeah, where I think that works is when you have the national final for a state-based category. So at Wakefield Park at the final round of Shannons this year, we've got the nationals for the Hyundai XL. So the best from all the various states around Australia come together at Wakefield and race off in one event national championship. So I think that's where it's... the potential for it is good, but yeah, why not? I mean, it's a good opportunity for the state level guys to get exposure at a national level. They get the live streaming that's on today, which they wouldn't get at a state level round.
But so you know what Shannons also get as well? Shannons get a bit of a crowd coming through.
Of locals.
Mm. And I mean, even if you only pulled in 100, 200 people through the gate of just to watch that local category, let's be honest, in some cases, especially on a Friday or a Saturday, it's 200 people more than what you normally get.
Yeah, I think the Shannons at both levels, as in the Shannons Nationals, as in CAMS, and also Shannons, the insurance company, because they're here to get exposure, and if we can get them more people across the line, I think that's where the Alfa Romeo guys in Sydney were perfectly a match, you know, one of those enthusiast-type clubs. That's what Shannons Insurance, you know, sort of promote, is that they're for the enthusiasts. So, you know, there's a tick in some boxes for a lot of people that are commercially involved in that side of the sport.
And what I wasn't aware of is that there's actually two Hyundai XL classes or categories here in Queensland. One that races strictly at Morgan Park, and the other one that races here at Queensland Raceway and...
Lakeside. And yeah, that's around a division of the
hot potato.
Yeah, it is. It's controversial. It's like, imagine one series sanctioned by the AFL and another series playing to identical rules not sanctioned by the AFL.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. So there's some political things going on there. But the best of the best from both of them are here this weekend, we understand. So that's a good thing. So it's bringing people together. But yeah, it's a bit of a political hot potato with rules and regulations. Let's talk about night racing, Shebeck.
Well, no, not yet. Let's cover off a couple of other categories first. We'll get there, Richard.
Okay.
Porsche GT3 Cup Challenge,
Proudly
presented by Pirelli. The Jim Richards Endurance Trophy was awarded yesterday, and he's a very, very worthy winner.
A very worthy winner, Shebeck. A terrific drive by the young guy from Perth. He's a real talent. You and I spoke to his engineer from Sonic Motor Racing, Mike Henry, a couple of weeks ago, and had very nice things to say about the way that this young guy is building his career. It was an interesting drive because he was headed early on by Brenton Grove, who beat him into turn one. It's not the first time that's happened this year, but he managed the lead, he managed his tyres, and that's what you've got to do in a long race like that. Really impressive stuff. He's a good kid, very level-headed, got a lot of natural ability, but he's got the mental stuff right as well, it looks like, so he maintains that pressure. So yeah, good drive. We called the race, Daz, and I thought it was a really good performance.
Yeah, I think Jordan has just got one or two race meetings of development ahead of where Brenton Grove is, because Sydney Motorsport Park, Brenton jumped down in front early within two or three laps. Jordan had the lead, and he's not just driving away with it. He's managing exactly what he's got under him. He gets a 1 or 2 second lead, and then maybe 1 or 2 tenths every lap after that just increases his lead. So he's not using too much tyre. He's not damaging the car in any way. So if there is a safety car, he's not got built a gap and you know, used the Pirelli too much and that sort of thing. So, yeah, doing very well. And a lot of that comes down to who's talking to you on the phone as well. Mm. And the guys like Mike Henry and the Sonic crew have got massive experience in doing that. Not taking anything away from the Grove crew, and there's another whole field of guys behind him, but he's doing a good job at the wheel, that's for sure.
Australian Prototype Series also here this weekend in a very, very sexy-looking orange LMP3 car to the victory.
Yeah, Dave Barham, local driver. That car's not scoring points this weekend, so just a local guy coming in to have a run, which is good to see, which is what that it's all about, is bringing more people into the series. But that championship battle was one of the closest in national racing in Australia this year, Shebex. It's really, really close. Mark Lauchie's now assumed the lead of the championship after yesterday. Phil Hughes, who led since the opening round, had an engine fail on his car in Friday. He borrowed a car for Saturday. That broke as well, so he's out for the weekend. So it's dropped him to third in the championship. So, yeah, a bit of drama there, and some of the fastest racing cars going around at a national level nowadays.
It's going to be interesting, too, coming to the next round, because I don't know whether Phil Hughes' Radical is going to be ideally suited to Phillip Island. The Wests will certainly be the slicker package through the air there. And let's hope that Dave Barham comes along as well. That 2-litre car, which he's got about 500cc over just about everyone else out there. So that's giving him a good bit of strength on the flat track here where it's nice and talky. But
I would think that Terry Piavides comes into Phillip Island too, doesn't he, with the F1000?
Yeah, I think they'll be all right. I would have expected him to be quicker here, to be honest, because the F1000s have been faster in the past, open wheelers, but this is a good open wheel track. But yeah, it's wide open. That's what we like. But the best thing about that series is there's about five different models that can win races any given weekend, and they're not the same car. They've got different wings, different aero, different weight, different engines, and it just mixes the field up, which is what we want to see.
Australian GT Trophy class saw a massive shunt during qualifying, wasn't it?
Yeah, that wasn't good at all, and I've actually seen some of the footage of it, and the stewards are still actually deliberating on that. I saw Troy from the Audi Customer Sport Racing this morning, and I said, so what's your thoughts on it? And he said, oh, we've got to really hold our breath until the stewards come down with their findings.
So take us through what happened, because obviously there were no cameras or anything, and a lot of us didn't actually see it. The first we heard of it was when you...
There's carbon fibre gone 30 foot into the air. And that's right. And from our vantage point now, I can still see the two black marks where those cars rubbed up against the wall when they went into it. Basically, came out of the corner. There was a car in front. Matt Stupas was leading Travis Bain on. The car in front had some vapour, oil, something coming out of it. Matt Stupas moved over to obviously avoid whatever it was falling onto his car or onto his tyres. And as he's moved over, Travis Bainon was already setting himself up for a drive up the inside, and they came together.
Okay.
So
the worst thing about it is, aside from two destroyed Audi R8s, is that it denies us Travis Bainon's entourage here today.
Oh, no, they're here. I've seen
the girls.
The merchandise is out there.
If you don't know what we're talking about, Google the Candyman. And you will understand very quickly what we're talking about and why it would be a loss.
And he's polarising too, so be prepared to be 50% glad you did and 50% upset that you have.
Probably don't do it when the kids are in the room.
He would like to think that he is the... who's the bloke that has the Playboy mansion?
Hugh Hefner?
You would like to think he's the Hugh Hefner of Australia.
He's a worthy contender, I think. Yeah. Worthy contender, ex-footballer. He's a big, strong boy, so, good on him. And I guess the shame is, as Richard said, seriously about motorsport, we're being denied a couple of R8s that are running at the front. Matt Stupas has had a pretty good run at it this year. You know, he's been probably overshadowed by the really strong experience of Rod Salmon and Steve McLaughlin in their Audis. But Richard Gartner in his Lamborghini yesterday, in the safety stop Lamborghini, was fantastic. And I'm actually looking forward to seeing the Minister for Enthusiasm and Smiles out there today. One of the most enthusiastic guys at the racetrack. He's one of those guys that even a really bad day at the racetrack beats a good day at the office. So great attitude.
All right, let's have a talk about night racing.
Right, now, not worry about the results. So last night, Bob Pearson and Rick Bates won a 300k production car race under lights here at Queensland Raceway. Now, the big debate about night racing in Australian motorsport of recently has been supercars trying to get a night race off the ground. But their argument is that the whole place has got to be lit up. It's got to be like Abu Dhabi or Singapore, where it's like you're racing in daylight, except it's dark outside the racetrack. And that's fine. I get that, and you need a certain level of lighting for TV. But last night, what we saw was brilliant. Patches of light around the racetrack, so it's safe, So you can see your braking markers, you can see your apexes of the corners, you can see the runoff areas, so
flag points.
Someone fires it off the road, you're okay. Outside of that, it's dark. Now, I didn't have any problems picking out the cars. So I was over at turn three, yep. The big braking zone down there was dark. There were flames, there were sparks coming off the wheels, brake rotors glowing. It was a real spectacle. My argument is that let's go a little bit beyond what we had last night. If you go to the Shannon's Nationals Facebook page, you can see a review and you can get an idea of how bright it was or wasn't. Let's not, with supercars, let's not go Abu Dhabi spec lighting. Let's go a little bit beyond we had more because last night, because there'll be resources and money to spend to
well, you need it for TV get a bit as well. More TV will need TV. A bit more lighting.
Yeah, but does it?
No, it does.
Does it, though?
Yeah, you can't just have a TV screen with a black picture.
Half of the Le Mans 24-hour is running pitch black, and yeah. They get away with live TV around the world just fine.
Daytona
24-hour.
We did Twilight Racing at Calder all those years ago in the mid-90s, and that track was not well lit.
Yeah, well, the supercars, it wasn't well lit at all. 97 was the last time they did that at Calder Park, 96 with the Peterborough Classic, 97 touring car round, and it was very patchy lighting. And I've watched that. It's on YouTube. Google it.
You can pick it up.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
I just... at night, the cars look faster. It's more spectacular. As long as the key areas of the racetrack where there is safety is the biggest concern are lit properly, I'm not worried about the middle of a straight being brightly lit like Singapore Grand Prix. Let them be in the dark. Let's see the flames. Let's see the brake disc. Let's see the sparks going off when they bottom out on the racetrack. I think that's part of the appeal.
There is extra dimensions, isn't there? And you don't realise until the sun's actually set and we're now in a full dark sky how much those dimensions come out.
There are only certain tracks that you could hold it at.
Well, this place would be probably, perfect for exactly, it.
Yeah.
This place would be better than Sydney Motorsport Park, I think.
Oh, yeah.
If you're going to do a night round, do it here.
Yeah, I think Sydney Motorsport Park, it might get lost there.
Yeah.
A track like here or Winton,
which
we can see the whole sort of layout from any vantage point.
I'm not doing it at Winton, mate, because outside of December and January, night racing at Winton would be the coldest place.
I suppose we're going to be battling fog there.
Even Barbagallo wouldn't be a bad place.
Yep.
Barbagallo's
already got lights.
The problem is that the East Coast is going to be well and truly asleep by the time you do that.
10 o'clock, no, I understand that.
Yeah. But that's my view from last night. Form your own opinion. Check out the Nationals Facebook page. Lots of photos. There's 250 photos from last night up there. There's a great video recapping the race last night. Form an opinion and let us know because I'm interested to see what people think. Should we not go the full-blown expensive? And that's the number one thing, is that it's hugely expensive to fully light a racetrack. Let's go a little bit further. Let's get some more temporary lighting in. But let's have it night racing. If we're going to go night racing, let's make it.
Well, we need the full races for Formula One. We need the full lights because they don't have headlights.
Well, exactly right.
So you need everything lit up as they do. But touring cars have headlights. Yep. Use them.
I guess the other thing on a supercars perspective, Chas Mostert's now very well qualified to comment on that because he was in the race last night and was actually in the thick of it. Didn't start the race. He went straight out into the dark night sky and did his entire stint. So there's someone who's at the very forefront of supercars at the moment, ran last night and would have a very valuable opinion, I'm sure, for supercars to listen to.
We'll find out what happens there.
Tell us what you think. I want to know. I legitimately want to know whether fans would pay to see what we saw last night or whether they would want more lighting around the racetrack for supercars. I'm keen to know.
Off the side of that, the last night's race, the M4, up until 90 laps, led it.
Yeah.
Just didn't lead the last five laps to the line there. Rick Bates was an absolute menace behind Grant Sherren, it was at the end of the race, and just
safety cars
zotted past him.
Two safety cars killed the M4, otherwise it wins by a minute.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, correct. Absolutely, but safety cars are a feature of it, aren't they?
Exactly. That's right. That's what you've got to build in. Boys, it's been an interesting discussion. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, boys.
Thanks, Tony.
Richard Crowell and Darren Smith joining me here. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're talking MotoGP with Mark Brax.
On 1116 SEN, on the grid with Tony Shebeki for Bendix Brakes. At your next car service, ask your mechanic to fit Bendix Brakes. Don't accept anything else.
12 minutes to 9 o'clock. George Zanikian and Troy Zantuck with the ultimate wrap after 9 o'clock. And then Finey and Adam Cooney with Inside Footy before live footy here on 11.16 SEN right throughout the afternoon. Time to talk some MotoGP after they've had their little sabbatical for the year to enjoy the summer sun over there in Europe. Mark Brax joins us, speaking of summer sun, up in Darwin. G'day, Braxy.
How are you, Shebex, on this fine Sunday morning?
It is beautiful. What are you doing up in Darwin, friend?
Darwin, I'm up here to help the Top End Road Racing Association celebrate their 25th anniversary here at the Hidden Valley Track, where people from all over Australia have come. It's been a whole week of celebrations. Part of the entry fee to get in of $350 gives you 4 extra days riding. So people are flocking up here, you know, middle of winter down there, and you come up here to 30-degree heat and go around the racetrack all day.
And have you had a ride yourself, my friend?
I've had heaps of rides, actually, and people have been offering me, silly enough to offer me all sorts of different machinery, and I'll continue this afternoon as well.
So it's been beautiful stuff. Speaking of riding, go on, Braxy.
Yeah, I was just going to say,
sabbatical's
over, and we're back into it for the
MotoGP
season. And what a way to kick it off for the second half of the year with Renault overnight with the qualifying. You know, Marc Marquez on pole, his teammate in third position, and the old stager in the middle of them all. I thought that was rather ironic that he was surrounded by the Repsol boys, and his teammate Maverick Vinales back there in seventh position.
Amazing stuff. Marquez nearly dropping his bike a couple of times during qualifying as well.
Nearly. It's just amazing to see him. He just, even in slow motion, he does it quicker than you can actually look at it. So it's, he's just an amazing creature, isn't he, that he can get away with that. But saying that too, Shebeck, seeing he's had those two near crashes, I'm tipping his teammate Pedrosa to take the win because he's been looking a lot smoother in the course of the 3 days, particularly in the sessions qualifying, pre-practice 3 and 4, and also in the qualifying where Danny was he was in the top three in all the sectors, and Rossi was in 3 of the 4 sectors. He was up there as well and topping the sheets in 2 of them. So whereas Marquez only made the top 3 in 1 of the sectors, sector 2. So if we go on that sort of thing, you'd have to think that Pedrosa's got a better setup and he's better suited around the track. He's tasted success there in the past, obviously. And, you know, with though, like you said, when you alluded about those crashes, I just think that shows you how much Marquez is on the limit, whereas Danny didn't seem to get too out of shape.
No, exactly. So that front row is Marquez, Rossi and Pedrosa, and then Dovizioso, Crutchlow and Lorenzo. So the two Ducatis in 4th and 6th. Tell us about the new fairing on the Ducatis, Braxy. There's been a lot of discussion about it.
Yeah, well, they're stretching within the rules realm of it, but it is inside the fairing. The rules state that they can't be protrusions like last year, and also the fairing cannot be wider than the handlebars. In that point, it actually, Gigi Deligna and the lads in the Audi wind tunnel, it would have done hours of testing on it. They've done it within the rules. And also, looking at it, Chebex, what they were doing last year, they were complaining that when you're in the fast corners, the actual wings were pushing the front tyre away from you. And I'm looking at those wings and thinking that the shape of them, there's almost an aerofoil on the out. There's two aerofoils in it. And one, when they lean over, there's a foil that'll be actually pushing the bike onto the ground. So I think they're experimenting. Whether it's the old placebo or not, who knows? But they've certainly got the people working. And, mate, if it's working as Lorenzo's up there, he battled his way through into Q2. He's on, you know, it's the closest he's been to his teammate, I think, in qualifying in the previous 9 races so far this year. And as Jeremy Burgess was famous for saying, he said, if your rider wants gold handlebars, give him gold handlebars. And that's working for Lorenzo with getting the fairings and all that done, and he gets his mojo back, good on him. Because Lorenzo, like anyone that's jumped on a Ducati, is too good a rider for him to just wallow in the mire of self-pity and what did I ever do wrong to deserve this sort of thing. So hopefully he's got to that stage. He's had a bit of a think over the off-season. Or the off-season, the summer break, and he can come back and actually start doing some stuff. And the thing is if you've got the consistency to keep those laps going all the race.
The third row will be Maverick Vinales, Daniello Petrucci and Battista, and then Johann Zarco in P10, Aleix Espargaró in 11, and Loris Bass in 12. Jack Miller down in 15th place, but he's been a bit buoyed over the last few days, hasn't he, about the fact that he's received some upgrades from Honda, which seem to have helped him a fair bit.
Yeah, it certainly has, but it hasn't been reflected by him and his teammate Tito Rabat getting up the timesheet, though. But when you look at it, they're not that far off, so hopefully he's got a race pace set up too that he can do something, because in all honesty, he's got to do something to get a ride. I've heard he's already signed with Pramac Ducati, that there's been no, obviously, official press release, but what I'm hearing on the grapevine is that he signed with Pharmac to replace Scotty Redding. And when you look at Scott Redding's performance, I think he's already given up the ghost that he hasn't got a ride with the Pharmac team alongside Danilo Petrucci for next year as well. So maybe Jack's done the deal and he's buoyed by that, but the fact that Honda's still looking after him and he can get some results going. But he's got to do something if those are just rumours that he hasn't actually signed a contract yet. So, because he's been there, but he hasn't been there right where he should be all year.
Braxy, some sad news during the week with one of the motorcycling legends passing away after a traffic accident.
Yeah, and our Nieto, the 12+1 he used to call it. He didn't like the letter, the number 13. 13 times world champion. I consider one of the greatest ever riders, but often gets overlooked because of the fact that he did all that in the 50s, 80s and 125cc categories, which were probably just as hard to ride as some of the other beasties. But it'll be a sad loss in the paddock because he was worked for Spanish television for a number of years and been a predominantly Spanish-backed championship. He's a lot of people there, so it's been a pretty sad time in the paddock this weekend for them. He was in Ibiza having a bit of a break, and he was on a quad bike and got hit from behind by a tourist in a car and got thrown to the ground and sustained pretty severe head injury. So it's two Grand Prix legends that were lost in a couple of months with Nicky Hayden's passing in May and now Nieto in last weekend. So it's a sad time in the paddock there, and they'll be really particularly the Spanish. I've got a lot of Spanish friends over there due to my relationship with Dorna and Co over the years, and I think there'll be a lot of heavy hearts and a lot of tears this afternoon when the race is finally finished and they can get away from the adrenaline of what happens at a racetrack and then the reality of what's happened will really hit home, I think.
And just very quickly, Braxy, Finland has been added to the 2019 MotoGP calendar.
Yeah, another one. Indonesia's trying to get one, but Finland, going back to the future, I suppose, because Finland was a long-time partner of the Grand Prix circuit for many, many years at the famous Imatra circuit, the road racing that was people would have seen photos of it without even knowing it, the famous shot of the airborne over the railway lines. Hopefully they haven't got any railway lines in this racetrack, but that'll be a good sign. But you've got to ask yourself, Tone, how many GPs can they have in a year? Like, I wouldn't mind having 52 and have a double up on Christmas and New Year just for the hell of it. But, you know, 20, it's over 20. You've got to be really stretching the realms of financial backing and just
viability.
Endurance, yeah. I don't know.
You're spot on, Braxy.
Who's going to be dropped? That's going to be the interesting thing. Or is Dorna thinking that they can get 22 rounds and everybody's still going to be happy with it? I don't know if the riders would be, that's for sure.
Well, time will tell when we see a final calendar, but this is until 2019, so maybe they're expecting something happen to one of the tracks to drop off over the next year or two. Mate, always great to talk to you. We'll do it again soon.
No worries, mate. Have a good day wherever you are.
Thank you, Braxy. Mark Brax up there in Darwin covering MotoGP for us. Well, that pretty much wraps up on the grid for the day. Thanks for joining us. Look forward to George Zanikian and Troy Zantuck joining us after the 9 o'clock news with the Ultima Wrap and then live footy starting at 10 o'clock with Finey and Adam Cooney and then taking us right through the afternoon. I'll catch you again next week. Till then.